on today's Run to the Top podcast.
As you know, the times when you get stronger are not when you're out there pushing the pavement or pushing the pace. It's when you're resting and your body is actually getting stronger because of what you've done to it during your workouts.
Welcome to the Run to the Top podcast from Runners Connect, where it's all about learning from the best and most inspiring minds in the sport. Together, we can train a smarter, healthier, and faster running community. Now here's your host, Stephanie K. Atwood.
Welcome. This is Stephanie K. Atwood, Boston Marathon qualifier, coach, and host for the Run to the Top podcast. Last week, I gave a discussion about marathon qualification for the Boston Marathon, and I mentioned that I was talking to you from Mexico. I am still in Mexico today, and I wanted to just add a couple of new insights into my time in Mexico. I'm going to be here for a while, so you're going to be getting a lot of these recordings from me. So right off, Mexico is actually pronounced Mexico in Spanish, and I wonder why we don't do that in the United States or why we've changed that over to Mexico. So anyway, I'm learning to say Mexico, and now you know that that's how the Mexicans, the Mexicanos, pronounce it, and so why not give it a try? I'm in Mineral de Pozos, which is north of Mexico City, maybe 4 or 5 hours, something like that, driving. And this is an old part of Mexico, part of the old historic Camino Real, and it has amazing running opportunities, beautiful trails, some great roads around here. I actually found that the easiest place for me to run was a paved road that's not too far from here. It's not too steep. Far enough. It's about 10 miles round trip, so that's a great distance. I can do it a couple times if I want to add extra distance. And it is not too heavily driven. What I have noticed here in Mexico, they have definitely different ideas about dealing with pedestrians or people on the side of the road. And this just feels like a safe road for me to run on and not have to deal with too much traffic while also being able to watch my footing. That said, there are amazing walking and hiking trails around here, and I have been taking advantage of those every other day because at this point in my life, I am walking or moving every other day doing something besides running. That's part of what I started doing several years ago, and I think it has worked really well for me. Unfortunately, a couple of days ago on my walk, I was crossing a ditch and I slipped and I fell and I actually broke my right arm, which has been a bit of a problem. So I'm working with a bit of a disability today. I am a right-handed person, and so using my computer, using anything is a problem with my left hand, but I'm getting more adept every day. Now, I did want to go into more detail today in today's podcast on what I started last week with my talk about Run Walk for Boston qualifiers. Thanks to all of you who wrote in and asked me for that pace chart that I offered. And also, I wanted to go into more detail today on what that pace chart actually talks about. In my talk last week, I focused on some innovative ways to train and qualify to run the Boston Marathon using run-walk technique. Lots of you responded to that and wanted to get that pace chart from me. I'm offering it again today to any of you who might want it and haven't seen it already, or if you have it, then you can refer to it when you're listening to this podcast. It was definitely a piece in training, what I have learned from my own training, as well as the numerous people I've coached, as a way for them to be able to use run walk technique and qualify to run the Boston Marathon, if that's the way that they're looking at what they want to do with their training. Interestingly enough, I talked last week about running 3 days a week and over distance training. I'm going to elaborate on those today as well, because those, as many of you know, are controversial subjects and not everybody agrees with with the way that I advocate using training and coaching, and so be it. You know, it's great to have different opinions about things, but I'm going to elaborate on those two things for you today. Over distance, 3 days a week of training for positive outcome, including qualifying for Boston. So let's get started. What we're going to go over specifically today are three and only three quality-focused running workouts per week, what those workouts need to look like, because it is not just getting out there and running three times a week. It is very focused, very strategized. Other types of workouts and rest that you need to do during the week in order to be able to qualify for something like Boston. Talk a little bit about resting pulse as another measurement. We'll bring that up. And nutrition during the periods of your training before the actual taper time. I'm not going to go into that because that gets covered a lot in a lot of talks, but the nutrition during those introductory portions of training often are just kind of skipped over. So we're going to go into some of that. As you know, I am host of Run to the Top podcast and have been since February of 2018. Been running for almost 50 years. Wow, where does the time go? I've been a coach for several decades and currently coach privately as well as with my run club called Go Wow Team here in California. Well, of course, now I'm in Mexico, but the club is in California and they are running even without me. Oh my gosh. I have national certifications as a nutritionist, personal trainer, and run coach. I have qualified for Boston several times since 1976, and the last one was in 2016, so I've been sticking with it. I do not run a marathon every year anymore. I used to run more marathons, and I just decided that I wanted to preserve, I guess, my good health and my ability to run by maybe limiting that, doing more trail kind of stuff, doing even more walking, and doing shorter races. I love racing. Competing is really fun. I do encourage you to listen to the last episode if you have a chance, because I went over some of the four basics about me. That was part of my introduction. I'm not going to do that today. What we're going to start off with in this podcast is a hypothetical runner who wants to qualify for Boston using the tools that I started showing you last week and that I'm offering you today. Those include three runs per week, with each run being specific and strategic to the goal. This person, this hypothetical runner, is a 45-year-old woman. Boston qualifying time in at the age of 45 to 49, that category, gives our runner an extra 10 minutes over when she was 44. So at 44, the qualifying time is 3:45. At 45, the qualifying time is 3:55. Here we go with our talking about strategy. Remember how I mentioned that last week? That's something that, you know, use those pieces to help yourself along, especially if you're new to all of this stuff. This is a great way to start thinking about how can you get the best race results out of your ability and your timing, all of that kind of stuff. So here we go. We've got 10 minutes more time at 45 to finish this darn thing than we did at 44. Okay, we're going to work from the pace chart that I offered to you last week. And those of you who are listening anew today and haven't seen it, you're welcome to let me know that you want it. I'll give you information on the end how you can email me with that. And we're going to evaluate her on that pace chart and kind of go over in more detail than last week how she's going to qualify for Boston. But this can also apply to other people who are running other things. I'm just giving you a hypothetical example. Now, the column, for those of you who have seen it, gives a heading called race time, and it goes from a 2-mile race down to a marathon. And in between, it's got a 5K race, a 5-mile race, 10K, 15K, 10-mile race, and half marathon race. These are statistics that have been put together through the RRCA, Roadrunners Club of America. And I picked this up a long, long time ago, and I actually don't know if they're still using it, but if they are, that's great. And if they're not, that's okay too. I have kind of adjusted it to how I wanted to use it, and I'm really happy with the results that I've seen and the tests that I've done on other runners than just myself, and how we have utilized it to improve our own training and our own race results. Now, our runner, in order to be able to run a 3:55, I'm looking in my marathon column and I'm going up to the top of that for a 2-mile race. Our runner statistically would need to run a 2-mile race at 2 miles at 14:54. That's a per mile time of 7:27. So she's got to run 7:27 for 2 miles in order to be able to run 3:54.09 for a half marathon, which comes out time-wise to be 8:55 per minute. So what I talked about last week, and I'll elaborate on this week, is that just because you can run, say, a 7:30 for 2 miles doesn't mean that you're going to run that same pace for 26.2. It makes total sense. And yet I have seen enough times when people don't understand that they not only can't run as fast for a marathon as they can for 2 miles, but they don't have to expect to run that fast. It's not going to happen. So give yourself this statistical advantage that I've written out here, or that I've got in my columns. And if you can run a 7:27 2-mile race, and you happen to be our hypothetical woman in the right age category, then you're looking strong for the potential to run a 3:55 marathon. Now, this column, what's so great about it is that it gives us times closer to a marathon. And if you're serious about running a marathon, then you want to run some distances shorter than that before you actually get into training for your marathon. You want to build up that base in your body. This woman, for example, should be able to run a 5K race at about 7:41 per mile, and that would come out to 23:53. And she should be able to run a half marathon in about 1:51.31. So we're giving you just general times here. This chart is specific, but if you're in that range, then you've got a good chance of being able to train well and become eligible for Boston through running a marathon in the pace range that is required. Now, what we also have on this pace chart that's so terrific is we have times on either side of it. And if you happen to be the next column over, the slower time over, so say you run a 2-mile race in 15 minutes and 15 seconds instead of the 14:54 time, that is the exact column that would give you a 3:55 finish time, then you have the potential for improving that. You're not talking about a whole lot of improvement. At 2 miles, it's only 10 seconds per mile. At a marathon, it's 9:07 per mile rather than 8:55 per mile. So yeah, you've got to be able to run about 12 seconds faster per mile for 26.2 of them. And because we're doing 3 focused runs per week, that is very possible for you to try to accomplish. And if not, then you have a really good base in order to keep working toward it as the years go by. This is not something that has to happen the first time. But what I have seen with my runners that I've coached is that by having realistic training paces for them and also having realistic goals about what they're capable of accomplishing, they can make this happen. They have to have the motivation. They have to have the dedication. And there's a bit of luck in this for all of us, but they can make it happen. So I want to talk over more specifics on how we can make this happen. 3 runs a week. This doesn't mean we're only working out 3 days a week, but it does mean that we're only running 3 days a week or requiring running. And really, that is my expectation, that you're doing other things during the other days of the week. And I'll go through that with you a little bit farther along in this talk. So we've got the 3 focused run workouts per week. The first one is speed. one speed workout per week. And that's going to correlate to the 2 mile pace time. So our hypothetical woman runner is going to be training at paces of 7:17 per mile or faster. That's what her goal is. If she's doing 100 or 400 meters, for example, we're going to break that down even more into what she would be doing for each quarter. I don't know exactly what the math is on that, but it would be 7 minutes and 17 seconds divided by four. She's got to be running her single laps faster than that increment of time, or she's not fast enough for this to work for her. Now, the second workout during the week is going to be a tempo type pace, and that would be related to her 10K race pace. And in her case, we are looking for a 10K 8:04 per mile. So each week we're going to be incorporating a tempo type of run, and she's aiming for that 8:04 or very close to that pace during her training. Yes, we're looking for that during her training. She's not going to be running 10K, which is 6.2 miles. She's going to be running something less than that, but she's running in that range of that 8:04 per mile pace. So she's pushing it, but she's pushing it in that mid-distance range, not in that absolute speed range. And then the third workout per week is going to be corresponding to her actual training or her actual race marathon time. In this case, we've got her with an 8:55 mile. We call that her planned marathon pace, or her PMP, meaning that when she's doing the endurance workouts, we're having her work at her PMP. In the beginning, she's working at planned marathon pace plus a certain number of seconds, 15, 30, and toward the end, we're cutting back on the distance that she's running, but we're having her run maybe 15 miles at that planned marathon pace so that she knows exactly what that feels like. So it's a very specific, very targeted, very strategic type of runs each week. And I wanted to go over week one of the sample marathon training program. This is an 18-week training program, and I wanted to go over week 10 so that, again, this hypothetical woman who is trying to qualify for Boston is going to be running these particular workouts during the different phases of her training. So week one, assuming that her long run is on Sunday, Monday, she's going to be resting. This is the first day. This is the first day of her training cycle. So, of course, week one of and day one, she's resting, which I'm sure she's just champing at the bit to get out there and do something. But she's resting in our hypothetical theoretical training plan. On week two, we've got her doing strength and core training. And this is part of the essential aspects of training well, focused, strategic for a qualifying time for a race. So we've got her working out for an hour minimum on Tuesday. She rested on Monday. That means nothing week one. But after that, when she's doing her long run on Sunday, that rest on Monday is going to be important. Day two, Tuesday, strength and core training for an hour minimum. She can go longer than that if it feels like it's working for her. And I did want to let you know that next week we'll be going more specifically into strength training. We've got a couple of weeks of talking about different kinds of strength and core training. So be sure to stay tuned for those upcoming episodes. Now, on Wednesday, we're having her do a track workout. This is absolute speed. And remember, I talked to you about her pace. Her mile pace needs to be 7:17 or faster during the workout itself. We are starting off with 1 mile warm-up, so she's just running that to get warmed up, right? And then she's going to be doing some dynamic stretches. And then we're going to go into 6 times 800s. Fast. So she cannot be slower than the marathon time divided or than the mile time divided by four, whatever that's going to come out. So 6 times 800, very fast. This is pretty much her maximum speed. We've got 1.5 minute recovery interval there where she's actually stopping and just giving herself 1.5 minutes to recover. And then we're having a 5 to 10 minute cool down at the end where she's moving. She can be either running or walking, and she's stretching at the end. Now, that's a hard workout, and that's week one, right? So she's getting into it right away. We've got her then on Thursday resting if she really is bonked from the speed workout the day before, or she can do a flexibility workout, yoga, her own stretching, some kind of movement that allows her not so much cardio, but giving her body that ability to move in different planes and be stretched. Now on Friday, we've got her doing a mile easy warm-up and then 4 miles at the tempo pace. And if you remember, I went through that tempo pace with you. That's her race 10K pace. And we've got her doing 4 miles at 8:04 per mile. That's pretty darn fast. And she's working toward that. She might or might not be able to do it, but that's the goal, is to go race tempo race pace, because we're looking to build up her absolute speed. We're looking to build up that mid-distance speed ability to hold a pace for a long period of time. And then our third workout is going to be building up endurance. So that's our Friday workout. On Saturday, we've got her doing another strength core training or resting if she needs to rest. And the resting is going to be based on her resting pulse in the morning when she wakes up. If you take your pulse in the morning when you wake up and everything is good and you're not sick or any of that kind of stuff, you're going to have a pretty much typical morning resting pulse every day when you wake up. Before you get out of bed, anything, you're just taking your resting pulse just to see what that is. So let's say, for example, it's 70 for her. Okay, so as long as her pulse on the morning of Saturday when she's doing her strength training exercise is 70 or around 70, 72, maybe 74, but it's not elevated, then she's going to do a workout that day, checking new aspects of her training, strength, and core workouts so that she's improving that part of her body. And then on Sunday, we've got our final run for the week, and she's going to be running 90 minutes at her planned marathon pace, her PMP pace. So we're not even seeing how far she runs. We're just having her run for 90 minutes at that pace, which, if you remember, it was 8:55 per mile. Okay, we're just having, so she's going to need some kind of measurement. She's either going to need to be on a track so she can tell how many miles she's run with a watch on, or she's going to need some kind of a GPS device so that she's checking her 8:55 planned marathon pace on that Sunday for 90 minutes and seeing how well she does with it. This is using real facts. It's using actual statistics of other people who have accomplished these same things and have these same times. And she's seeing if she's going to fit into that. Now, another caveat, and I love this part, is if she's able to run that 8:55 mile for her 90 minutes of running each mile at 8:55, but she's not able to run that mid-distance tempo run at 8:04 per mile. We only had 4 miles this week, right? But she wasn't able to do that. It was just too fast for her. And then she also was not able to do the 2 mile race at 7:27 per mile. She just didn't have the speed. Well, then we know that she needs to work on those two. She needs to start focusing on making those things happen, working towards those two parts of the whole equation. Faster absolute speed for 2 miles, faster mid speed at that tempo pace. This is what is going to get her to the end when she qualifies for Boston by running a marathon at that 3:55 time limit. Now, I wanted to go into one more week of the training because this is farther along, and I just wanted you to see how the over distance part fits in here, because this is one of the parts I advocate. Lots of coaches don't advocate this, but my point has always been, what the blank does it feel like to go after 20 miles when all you've ever done in your training is 20 miles? So that's my basis for my thinking. And here we are, we're 10 weeks into the training. Remember, we've been doing long runs on Sunday. So on Monday, we've got a rest day. Then on Tuesday, we've got strength and core training for an hour minimum. So she's putting in the strength and core training. She's getting stronger. She's getting more flexible. All of those pieces are coming together. On Wednesday, she has a track workout, 1 mile warm up again. She's 3 miles on the track at tempo pace, and then a cool down. So this is a relatively easy tempo run for her, really easy to measure on a track. So yeah, we're working on our tempo pace here, and she's going to see if she can actually do 3 miles at 8:04 per mile consistently for 3 miles. It's a great workout, and she should be able to accomplish this day because we're working on speed, but we're not working on extreme speed because we've got a long workout this weekend. And so we're kind of prepping up for that. Now on Thursday, she can either rest if she's really tired and her resting heart rate is above her normal, or we can have her do some kind of a flexibility workout, stretching, yoga, whatever. Friday, we've got our tempo type of run. So on Friday, we've got a mile easy, then we've got 4 miles at that tempo pace. Whoa, yeah, can be hard, might not be too hard. Let's see how it goes for her. And then she's got 1 easy mile of cool down. So 6 miles total, but 4 of them at tempo pace and the other 2 just putting in the distance and also allowing her body to warm up and cool down. On Saturday, assuming everything is going well with her resting pulse in the morning, saying that she's recovering from these workouts, we're going to do 30 to 60 minutes of strength and core training, or if she needs to, rest. Because the next day on Sunday, we're doing an endurance run, and she's going to be running 20 miles at her planned marathon pace plus 30 seconds. So her planned marathon pace, if you remember, was 8:55. So she's actually going to be running those 20 miles at 9:25 per mile. This is where we're upping the distance, but we're dropping down in the time. But we're not just dropping down to any time, which is one of the problems with a lot of training programs. They just say do 20 miles. Well, we're working toward a more specific goal, and we've got a more specific training plan to make that happen. So planned marathon pace plus 30 seconds, and then here's where the over distance comes in. 2 more miles at any pace, including walking. I don't care how that next 2 miles gets in there, because what we're doing now is we're working on increasing the distance of where most marathon training plans stop. And this is going to give our runner both the understanding of what it feels like to go another couple miles. It's also going to give them the actual distance, and it's going to give them the confidence that when they get up to 26 miles in training, they're going to be able to finish a marathon. An amazing mental strength that I'm giving them that a lot of training programs don't give them. Okay, so this is really exciting to me when we get to this point. But as you can see, this week, we kind of pulled back that week 10. We pulled back on the speed and the tempo in order to allow her to have a strong endurance run at the end of the week. And she should be feeling pretty darn good at this point. I can tell you from my own experience, when you're running on the pace that's given to you as your training pace, planned marathon pace, an actual goal that you have in mind, plus 30 seconds, so you're taking it easy, relatively speaking, and then to have that extra 2 miles in there because you've got to go 26, not 20, it's just the pieces are all coming together, and it feels really, really good. I wanted to recap what we've talked about up to this point, and then we're going to go into some nutrition stuff. So each week of the 18 weeks of training for a marathon with this plan that I'm giving you just a general recap of is very focused and very strategic based on actual times, actual types of runs to be able to develop those strengths within you as a runner. And they're also very strategic. We're saying this is what they're strategic. They're not just running, not just putting in miles and kind of wondering how it's all going to come out at the other end. Now, periodization, I mentioned this last week, and I'm just going to allude to it today. Periodization is talking about how if you're serious about doing well in a couple of races, qualifying for Boston or having a really good 10K or half marathon is a very popular distance for people, then you want to pick one or two major total effort, everything goes into them races in a year. And that's called periodization. So you're building up to those major efforts a couple of times a year. And then the other races and the other things, other training that goes into the rest of the year is based more on staying strong, staying motivated, fine-tuning things, but not always going 105%. Because if you do that, you will burn out. There is no doubt about it. You will either burn out motivationally and just not have the desire to push so hard anymore, or you will injure yourself. And either one of those is a really frustrating part of training. And anybody who's trained for very long knows what it feels like. So that's what we call periodization. And that's just part of strategic, you know, a part of having a good strategy for running and racing the rest of your life. Now, I also want to emphasize rest. Rest is so essential. And where I talked about that resting heart rate in the morning, that's such an easy, simple way of measuring where you are with your training and how well your body is recovering. Because as you know, the times when you get stronger are not when you're out there pushing the pavement or pushing the pace. It's when you're resting and your body is actually getting stronger because of what you've done to it during your workouts. So, okay, recapping, cross-training. Cross-training is really essential. And I know when I started running, I did nothing but run. 5, 6, sometimes 7 days, because the seventh day would be racing. I would run and I would keep running. And I was much younger then. Even then, I got injured a few times because I just wasn't running smart. And I loved running. So I thought, well, I'll just keep running. And I loved it and it was fun. But cross training is an essential part of being a good runner and staying uninjured. So please don't devalue the days when you're not running and when you're allowing your body to be strong in other ways. It's really an important part of an overall successful and long-term training program. And then nutrition. Nutrition is essential, and eating well is a huge factor. And there are obviously many, many different thoughts on the subject and lots of different ways to address it. But I wanted to bring this up. I'm going to talk about it more in this next segment of today's talk, because I think nutrition is not looked at, especially during our basic training sections and then up to the point where we're tapering and where we are on race day. I think it's not addressed as well as it should be. Now, one final note on over distance. I mentioned this last week. I'm going to say it again. I think over distance is really an essential part of training. Certainly does have contradictory opinions, but my opinion is put it in there, do it with caution. Do not try to run 26 miles at your planned marathon pace or even at a slightly slower pace. You're working at it in a way that is going to allow you to understand what that distance feels like to your body without overdoing the stress and the terrible tearing down of all aspects of your body that happens with over distance. Now, of course, with trail running these days, people are running 100 miles. So it's a different, you know, it's a different thing. But one of the things that trail runners do, and we all know it, they walk, they eat. All of the things that we as marathoners kind of don't put into our race day strategy. Well, trail runners do that both in training and they do it on race day. So that's how over distance fits into things for me. And now I'm going to move on to nutrition. With nutrition during the training phases of our marathon, our hypothetical marathon, or any other kind of event that you're training for, running event that you're training for, as you're building your mileage, that's going to create an increased need for energy. And we measure energy in calories, but nutrition facts measure energy in grams. If you look at the list on the back of a nutrition package, or if you look online for nutrition information, you'll see it measured in grams. And that's actually a measurement of weight. So what does that mean? Where we're going to talk about that a little more in a second, but you need to choose your energy wisely. In other words, think of food as energy that is going to help your body be able to handle the demands that are put on it. And in the beginning, a lot of times you're not putting such heavy demands on your body. You're building up to something, but initially there might not be much more caloric requirement than what you usually eat, even if you're not active. So listen to your body, really get a sense of what it needs for you and what you need from it. And as most of us know, there are three macronutrients, the big categories, and those are protein, fat, and carbohydrate. And there are as many theories about how to combine all of those as there are people on this earth, I swear. But one of the things that most people who deal with health and with fitness especially agree on is that real food versus processed food is the way to go. So the closer you can be to the source and the closer that you can be to the natural food, then more likely you are to get the full nourishment and the full energy that you want out of it. So less processed means a more natural source and the potential for full complement of nourishment, including all the essential micronutrients. And that's what gets talked about a lot and what people don't necessarily understand too well, but we've got macronutrients and we've got micronutrients. And I want to share a little story with you. In 2010, I was 59 and training for a marathon. I needed more protein than previously when I had trained for other marathons. And I also found I needed more salt. I also discovered my own susceptibility to exercise-induced asthma, and this was exacerbated by pushing my electrolyte input on long runs. In other words, I needed to drink and eat more of the micronutrients out there, and I needed more protein during my long runs. And how did I figure this out? I tried things, or I would do something, and by the end of my long run, I would be, I would be having trouble breathing because of that exercise-induced asthma, which came from fatigue. And I would also have fatigue. So it's like, where did my energy go? And so I started adding more protein to those workouts, and I started adding more micronutrients in terms of electrolytes, found that that really helped and made me able to do the ultra distance, the long distance that I'm talking about, where I would run up to 26 or 28 miles and be able to handle it because I was trying different nutrition things and seeing how it worked. On the earlier training phase, kind of in the beginning when those workouts are shorter, there's not necessarily an increase in calories that's needed, but there is more attention needed to the quality of food, and try different percentages of fat, protein, and carbohydrates so that you understand the correlation between those three and how it affects your body, because we're not all the same and it's going to make a difference. This is what I used that beginning training phase to do, is just try different things. And by the end of a workout, when I felt fatigued, then I knew I needed to do something else to try and make it better. And that's what that initial training phase, say maybe the first 6 weeks of an 18-week training period, or when you're in your periodization that I talked about earlier, that's a great time to just try some things out and see how they work for you. Even the different electrolyte drinks out there with more sugar, less sugar, with protein, without protein, more caffeine, less caffeine, all of those things. Try those out during this period of time. That's the way that you're going to be able to figure out what works for your body. So I wanted to mention something here about carbs, protein, and fat in terms of the relationship between grams and calories, because I don't think people have a good understanding of that. And I'd love to help you understand more how those two fit together. So whether you're eating carbohydrates or protein, 4 calories of energy are in each gram of those two. So 1 gram of a carb or a protein equals 4 calories. So that's a good thing to know, because that's how much energy you're actually getting from each gram of carbs or of protein that you're putting into your system. Now, fat, on the other hand, has 9 calories of energy in each single gram. So when you're eating fat, you're getting more than twice the amount of energy in 1 gram. So it's just something to think about and start looking into your own needs. There's lots of other things about nutrition, tolerance, when you're pushing yourself, which ones can actually sit in your stomach or which ones can make a difference for you. We absorb things differently, all of that kind of stuff. But just in terms of energy levels, you have twice, more than twice as much energy in 1 gram of fat. And that's another subject we're going to have some people on talking about nutrition, and especially body fat metabolism and how that all fits into training, because that's a fascinating aspect of our training and improving our training. So this is the beginning of our training phase early on, and we're testing things out. We're kind of checking how our body reacts to different amounts, different percentages of carbohydrate, protein, and fat. And we're also looking at real food versus not so real food and seeing, you know, how our body responds to these things. And even when we take them during our training, it's all stuff that we're testing in that first 6 weeks or so. In the middle training phase, we're getting more into a need for more calories because we're upping the amount of energy that we're using. And we're also testing what worked during the first phase. In other words, we're pushing the nutrition periodically with things that we've already tried, but we're seeing how far we can push it. And I remember in a talk that I was at with Matt Fitzgerald, who's an author and has written books on all aspects of running, including nutrition. And Matt Fitzgerald said that this middle training phase was a good time to stress your body a bit with nutrition and see what happens. So as an example, no electrolytes on a 2-hour run where you only drink water instead of taking electrolytes, where you know that those electrolytes have made a difference in the past, but you want to see how your body's going to respond to it with no electrolytes. You're also wanting to see, you're wanting to stress your body a little bit more nutritionally and see how it does. This is a test. This is something that you're not doing kind of helter-skelter. You're actually saying, okay, today I'm going to go for a 2-hour run. Generally, I do this with my electrolytes. This is what I do with my other nutrition that I take on that run. But today I'm going to take a backup, but I'm not going to drink electrolytes during 2 hours and see how I respond. See how it feels for you. This is how you're stressing your body nutritionally and testing where you're going with it. Another thing that is worth checking, these are just a couple of examples, is taking extra caffeine. So maybe you've been doing caffeine or you haven't been doing caffeine at all. So put some caffeine into your daily nutrition or into your run and see how it makes you feel. See if it helps you or if it makes you feel worse. These are the kind of things where you can start fine-tuning your nutrition, and it really makes a difference. And in this middle phase, you're strong enough that you're going to be able to probably handle it. You're also strong enough that if it doesn't work for you, missing a day because it caused you a lot of stomach distress or whatever, better to test it now and then revise your nutrition plan rather than thinking you're going to try it later or on race day and finding out that it was a fiasco. The final phase of training, the taper week and race day, I'm not going to go into those. We talked about those a little bit last week. There's lots of information. We obviously can go over those at some other time. I'm going to get some people to come and talk with us about it. I'd love to do that. But I wanted you to be thinking today about early on nutrition and see what you can do with that. I do have one race day tip, and it's not so much a nutrition as as a strategy. I don't know if this applies to men as well as women. To be honest, I haven't talked it over too much with men, but I do know that a lot of women feel that they've got to stop during the race and pee. And I have checked this out, and I have also asked other women to test it out for me during races. Do not stop. Because most of the time, what you will find is just that agitation during the race is what makes you feel like you have to pee. And then you take the time to stop and go through all the details to make that happen, maybe even wait in line. And then you find that you don't need to. So just take that as a tip. I'd like you to try that in a race. It might be worth trying in a race before you actually go into a major race, just to see that it works, because I would say 99% of the time, that's a technique that's going to save you time. And you're also going to be very pleased at not having to pee. Believe me, it doesn't happen. It just feels like it needs to happen. Last week, I mentioned the three goals in your trying to get to the end of a race, and I think it's really important. Please listen to that episode if you have a chance, because having a few different goals for each race is really good and sets you up for success instead of setting you up for high expectations, not having it met and then feeling like you're a total failure. That's just not the case. So try to listen to that last episode that I offered and see how that works for you with your three race goals. I also wanted to remind you that I do have that pace chart. I'd love to have all of you see it, because it's very useful, and I think most of you will benefit from it. You can get that from me, and I'll give you that email information in just a moment. I'm going through my notes here and just coming down to that part where I'll give you that final information on how to contact me. Another reminder here, listen to your body. The longer you run, the more this applies. So get to understand its messages and listen with your heart, your brain, and your body. That is, I think, a huge part of being a runner who can run for a long time, is realizing that the final goal for most of us is to be able to run for the rest of our lives. And it also is staying uninjured. So listen to your body. It will help you learn a lot that if you just ignore it about running that you would like to listen to in a future podcast, please let us know by posting on our Facebook page at runnersconnect.net/FB for Facebook. And if you would like me to send you the pace chart I use in my coaching, send me an email to StephanieK@gowowliving.com. That's StephanieKay at gowowliving.com. StephanieK@gowowliving.com. Give me your best marathon time in the last couple of years and your age if you want, because then I can give you a little more feedback on how you are in terms of being able to qualify for Boston. If you sent me an email last week and you haven't gotten that pace chart yet, it's not because it's not coming, but it's because with this broken right arm, I am definitely much, much, much slower on the computer, but I'm getting better. So I'm working on it, and I will be sending it out to everyone who asks for it. And thank you, our audience, for joining us for today's podcast at Run to the Top. Please subscribe to Run to the Top at runnersconnect.net or on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify. You'll be notified every week when the new episode is published. And most importantly, thank you for listening. We'll be back next week with another great talk to entertain, educate, and inspire you as you head on out to your running workout. This is Stephanie K. Atwood, your host with Run to the Top, and have a great day.
Thanks for listening to the Run to the Top podcast from runnersconnect.net.